Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I scour the globe to find interesting entrepreneurs, business people, authors, speakers, people I have met on Facebook and through social media marketing who are just fascinating and who have these great stories to tell. So they come on the show, they share their stories, their wisdom, and how they got where they are. And very often they share their backstory, the really important, this is why I did it, this is how I did it. And Kimanzi is going to do that today, I think. I first interviewed author Kimanzi Constable in November of 2012. Doesn't seem like that long ago, but it was. He had written and self-published a little book called Tales of the Everyday Working Man and Woman, and he sold an incredible 70,000 copies as of that interview date. That's an incredible number of copies for a man who had no platform, no following. He just did it. We're going to talk a little bit about that as well. You can also go back in my archives and find the other interviews that I did with him that really do cover that particular topic. So for his story, for about 12 years, he worked at a job that he really, really hated, so much so that his days were just consumed with thoughts of quitting and just saying, heck with it, I can't take it anymore. But as a family man with a wife and children to support, I want an option. Things finally came to a breaking point in the summer of 2011. He was over $180,000 in debt. That just makes me cringe. His marriage was falling apart, and his children barely knew him because he was always working and in debt. The cherry on the cake was that he was also 170 pounds overweight. Guys, misery will do that to you. I mean, it really will. It can just make you overweight and unhealthy. But in the back of his mind, he had a dream of being a writer. But how could that be possible? He was a guy with no college degree. How could he become a writer? But more than that dream of authorship, he wanted freedom, freedom from that daily drudge. So about 3 years ago, Kimanzi finally got fed up enough to just stop existing and to do something, actually physically take steps to do something about his dreams. He decided to stop listening to all of those things internally and externally that were keeping him from a life that he and his family truly deserved. So fast forward just a couple of years. Today, he is a contributing writer for the Huffington Post, Entrepreneur Magazine, and Mind Body Green. He's a business editor at the Good Men Project, and his mission is to help men and women create true freedom in life. Kimanzi, I am so proud of you. Today we're going to pick up the threads on your tail and find out how you lost that 170 pounds. That's a big, big thing right there. I mean, that's inspiring all by itself. But then you also moved from snow country to Maui. And we're going to ask you how you came so far so fast, and I would like for you to tell people how they can do it as well. So the title of this show today is Yes, You Can Do That, and Kimanzi is here to share with us. Kimanzi, welcome back.
Can you believe that when we talked about all this back so many years ago that these were things that I was in the process of doing and just...
I know.
It's been incredible, yeah.
Well, and it was so fast. I mean, look, the thread that sticks in my head is that you had a family. It's hard to break out and just go, I'm quitting my job. I can't take it anymore when you've got a wife and children. And then to pack up, because I remember you telling me you really hated the snow. And I was like, I love snow, but you wanted to go to a warm climate. And you did it, and you did it in pretty short order. So I really, really want to talk to you. Let me back that up. I want to listen to you. Talk about how you did it, because it didn't take you long. So what clicked in your head? What happened?
Now, shortly after we had talked in 2012, it was actually at the end of that year that I was able to go ahead and quit that job that I had hated for so long. I had spent all of 2012 really building this business of writing and speaking and coaching and all that good stuff. I spent 2012 building that. And so at the end of 2012, we had some money saved. We had a business that was generating some good income. So we decided to go ahead and make that leap. So 2013 comes around, and it was kind of a scary year, Denise, because the first month was great. We had like $6,000 in revenue, and we were like, woohoo! Second month was great. Third month, it was like $1,500. Fourth month, it was like zero. Zero. Yeah, so I'm like, am I going to have to get a job again?
I'm sitting here flinching for you. I know. Okay, keep going.
So it picked up after that, of course. And then we had talked again in 2013. My first published book had come out, which was an incredible experience. As a writer, it was something that I always dreamed about, going into a bookstore and seeing my book. I had taken my 87-year-old grandfather, who I had told in the past that, hey, grandfather, I wrote some books. He's like, where are they? I'm like, they're e-books. And he doesn't touch computers. And he's like, what's an e-book? And I'm like, it's a book on the computer, Grandpa. And he's like, that's not a real book. So when the book came out in the bookstores,
there was a time I would have agreed with him, but no more. But there was a time I'm like, no, it has to be in your hands. It has to have a cover. It has to have a spine. You need to be able to hold it and breathe it and smell it. And I get where he's coming from. I do.
Well, I'm reading an incredible book called Publishing a Writer's Memoir by an author named Gail Godwin. And she was talking about publishing the book in her first book in 1970. And what you had to go through back then to get a book published was absolutely incredible. I mean, it's almost impossible back then, it seemed like. But when they published a book, they put the full weight of the publishing house and everything into this book. So with self-publishing, what we have today, it's just wonderful that we have the opportunity to put our work out there like that in e-books and publish it on our own. So my grandfather, he just didn't understand it, which was cool. But when the published book came out, I picked him up. I took him to Barnes & Noble. We were walking, cruising through the shelves. I'm like, what's that, Grandpa? And I hadn't told him that the book had come out. And he looked over on the shelf, and he saw it. And he looked at me, and he's like, is this you? I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, pick it up. So he picked it up, looked inside, saw my picture. And he's like, this is your book? I'm like, yeah. He's like, it's in the bookstore? I'm like, yeah. He's like, I can hold this thing. And he's holding the book. I'm like, yeah. And then he just started crying, Denise. And that right there was like the pinnacle of everything that I had worked for.
Right.
And he died last month. And so I was just glad that
sorry.
He was long enough to see it.
Yeah. And that is an amazing, I mean, I got a little teary-eyed listening to you because that's special to be able to share that, you know, with somebody who honestly didn't understand, you know, that there are other ways of reading these books. And that's a special story. I'm glad you had that opportunity.
So after that, I spent 2013 really building the business, but then we were also thinking about a number of other things. The move to Hawaii, that had been something we had thought about since 2010, since we had come to Maui on a belated honeymoon. And we had fallen in love, and we said, we want to retire there someday. And I had told you about this in 2012 and 2013, I talked to you about this. So 2013 was really the year to start saving up money, to start doing all the research. And it's hard work to sell all your stuff and move 6,000 miles away to an island in the middle of the Pacific. So we want to make sure, because a lot of people that end up moving to Hawaii end up washing out pretty quickly because they really aren't prepared. So we spent 2013 planning this move here, selling all of our stuff, seeing which island is right for us. And then also in the midst of that was my weight loss. I had lost weight and gained it and gone through that cycle several times. This time I just wanted to lose it for good. and I wanted to do it the right way. And so instead of doing some crazy diet or anything like that, I just had portion control on my meals. I cut out sugar and sweets and junk food, and I ran. I started running. My mom's from Kenya, so running, and I lived there for 2 years, so running's kind of in my blood. And over time, over a year's period, I was able to lose that 170 pounds. And I've kept it off now for nine months. So I actually learned
You lost that much in 1 year?
In 1 year.
Wow. And you're healthy. I mean, it's not like you went on a starvation. I mean, you researched it and you went about it in a very smart way.
Yeah, I was even a vegetarian for 9 months. I had cut out meat. And now I've since started eating chicken and turkey. But I was really just really committed to the healthy lifestyle and listening to my body more than anything. What was my body telling me? And that really helped me. It's helped me keep it off and feel so much better. And then in the beginning of this
can
year,
I ask a quick question before you go on with that thought?
Yes.
One of my questions about that is that I find that the healthier your body, the healthier your mind. That's, to me, it's just the corollary is there. Have you found that you have more clarity of purpose and clarity of mind as your body started to get healthier?
Oh, 100%. Okay. I felt like I had more energy. I would start my mornings with a run, and when I get back from that run in the morning, like, I feel invigorated, like I'm more productive, I have more energy, my mind is clearer, I can focus better. That exercise and just being healthy, it's helped every other area of my life.
Well, that makes sense to me, because I know if I'm feeling a little bit icky for whatever reason, my mind doesn't quite work right. I'm not as logical. I'm not as linear. I'm a little bit whiny, which is unpleasant any time. You know? And it's just, you know, I find that when I feel good, I work better. You know, my mind works better. I'm able to write. I'm able to communicate. I'm able to follow up on things. And it sounds like you're finding that to be true as well.
Oh, absolutely. On the mornings when I don't run, or if I had a bad day and just ate more than I should or something like that, it definitely affects my day. You know, I can recover, but most mornings when I do what I should be doing, everything just kind of clicks.
Well, and so what prompted you? I mean, I've got so many questions and I'm not even sure where to start with them. I mean, you understood your... I do. I mean, I've been following you around on Facebook. We've been friends on Facebook and LinkedIn and all the social media. In fact, that's how we met. In fact, I think your... wasn't it Sound Wisdom who sent me a copy of your first book? How did that even happen?
Yeah, what ended up happening was the self-published book had done well, as you had mentioned. And I had some success with that. I didn't even think about the traditional publishing route. And I went to a conference in 2012, and it was a Brendan Burchard conference, and I was sitting there at dinner talking to this guy, like, randomly, and I'm telling him about self-publishing, and my books had done really well by that point, and I'm pulling out my laptop, I'm showing them numbers, like, you know, I don't know, I was just excited. So this guy was very patient, and he listened, and he didn't say, you know, who is this weird guy that's rambling on? And at the end of that conversation, he was like, oh, yeah, by the way, my name is Nathan. I'm the publisher at Sound Wisdom. And that's how my relationship with Sound Wisdom started. I got back home from that conference. I sent him a couple books. He said Tales of the Everyday Working Man and Woman probably would not work. But then I sent him a book called The Difference Between Living and Existing, A 9-Month Plan to Change Your Life. And that was the book that they ended up picking up and editing and publishing. And that book, can you believe that book has been out there almost 2 years now?
No. It seems like I've known you forever. But in another sense, it seems like it just kind of went right past us. It's like, what the heck happened? Oh, that was Comfortable. He's a comet. He's out there. You saw him. He's come. Okay, there he was. I mean, you have just taken this and done amazing things in really a very short period of time, and that's what I really kind of want to drill down to. But And one of the other things that I wanted to talk with you, too, is social media engagement, because as I spoke of just a moment ago, that's kind of where we caught up with one another, and we've been firm friends ever since. And honestly, I know that some of the talks that you give and your keynotes and courses that you're teaching now, you're talking about that. It's so important.
Yeah, well, I have to apologize because we are friends, so Denise knows that I'm a little bit crazy on social media, so I do have to apologize, Denise.
Read my posts?
Yeah.
I was talking today about my cat who has a cold. I mean, you talk about out there. I'm out there.
But it's so much fun, though.
It is. It is. And this is how we really engage. Look, you and I have never physically met. It's unlikely that we will. Look, I get Christmas cards, and I know you do too. You gain these friends, fans, followers when you become a resource in social media, when you're deliberately and consciously engaging with other people. And you're not doing it so they'll come buy your product or they'll come, you know, to your seminars. You would like for them to. But that's not your real purpose in getting out there. You're just saying, hi, how are you? How can I help you? How can I be a resource for you? And you are excellent at that, and you always have been. There's a genuineness about that that it shows, and that's why people tend to follow you around and they want to buy your products and come to your events. But the thing is, it's important, and so many people do it so poorly because they're not being, and I'm going to use this grossly overworked word, but they're not being authentic. And you are authentic.
Well,
you always have been, and I appreciate that.
And I appreciate you saying that, and thank you. And I think that for people like me and you and others that are listening, we see so much of what you're talking about, sales, like buy this, buy that. I'm great. I'm the expert. I'm the authority, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You see it so much that when you see the real thing, it's like it hits you in the face.
Well, it is. I mean, it's social media engagement is exactly that, and I'm not saying that's the only way to go. I mean, you get out there and you network. You went to Brendon Burchard's event. I was actually watching him. I may see you in the audience if I keep watching him. I think it's from 2012. I've got the disc of his event. I'm watching. Are you in there? Because I've only got through. Watched him a long time ago, and I haven't. Ah. I'm going to keep going because I turn them on my living room. It's a great room. My house is just this one big room, basically, with bedrooms tacked on either side. And I will turn on the TV, which is this giant TV, and I'll turn those on. And I'm telling you, you want to watch me clean house? Put Brendon Burchard on there. I am cleaning house. That guy inspires me to just get up, get physical, move. I mean, I'll be doing something. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh, and I realize I'm standing stock still in my living room. I'm listening very intently. And then I'll jump up and do a little football cheer. It's ridiculous. And then I look over my shoulder. I live alone, by the way, to see if anybody saw me acting like an idiot. I mean, it's really. But,
well, what are the cats say?
Oh, they know me very well. They're fine with it. But the thing is, I mean, you get out there and you network. So I think my point for telling this is that people need to really pay attention to the steps that you took. You can work another job. You can work two jobs. I did. I was working when I got my computer science degree. I was doing all kinds of things, sleeping very little. But I did it. When you know your why and you know your purpose and you know you've got to do it, you find the ways to do it. So getting out on social media, going to networking events. What other advice can you give people to kind of get them down the road?
Yeah, definitely. Well, the biggest thing that I learned in all of this is focus where you focus your time and efforts, because I ran down a lot of rabbit holes. I wanted to try multi-level marketing. I wanted to try membership websites. I wanted to try ClickFunnels. I wanted to try everything that I had read. And I tried all that stuff, and it didn't work. I had to figure out where I should be focusing my time and what worked best for me, my personality, what I wanted to do and what I wanted for my life. And once I figured that out, it all came back to writing. And so I wanted my writing to get out there in a bigger way. So in 2012 and 2013, I said, that's what I'm going to do. And in both of those years, I had, in the writing world, I wanted to get traffic back to my website. And one thing that really had brought traffic was guest posting. So you write an article for somebody else's website, and they give you links back to yours. And in 2012 and 2013, I did that on over 60 different websites. So it was a lot of writing. And podcasts, being on podcasting is something it was popular then. It's even more popular now. So the chance to go and share my...
And it's easy to do. It's easy. It's a great way to connect with people.
And it's only going to get bigger. Everybody's got a smartphone now, and they got their podcast app, and they can listen to all their favorite shows. So in 2012, 2013, I went on a lot of podcasts, met a lot of cool people. I was on over, I think it's over 100 shows now. So just talking to a lot of great people. But those things helped me bring traffic and bring exposure to some of the things that I was doing. And it grew my audience. And then it was a matter of, okay, I want to make some money at this. I have to have some things to sell. I had the book, the self-published book. I had my regular book. I started coaching. I think that's new since the last time I talked to you. I was not coaching, but I did start some one-on-one coaching. So many people had asked, hey, how did you do this? And Denise knows me. I'm an introvert. So
me too.
To coach people, talk to them one-on-one is like scary stuff. Like sometimes we even have to do it over video where I can see them.
Oh.
Yeah.
And that's why we've always gotten along so well, because we're both we're high-functioning introverts. And it's, people say, oh, well, are you shy? Oh, my God, no, I'm not shy. And I like people just fine as long as they're on the other side of the door, but I just like to be left alone.
Yeah, exactly. But I started coaching, and that was new for me, but I found joy in it to help people to see the things that they weren't seeing that were right there, but because they were so close to them, they couldn't see them. And so I found joy in helping them see those things and then give success. And so that was new. I continued to speak. I created some more products. And then I also started consulting, which was also nerve-wracking, to start working with companies now and helping them build their online presence. And to go into a company and to talk to, like, this room of random people, that was terrifying at first. But I always remind myself that I'm blessed and I'm privileged to do this. This is a joy. This is what I dreamed of being on that bread truck all those years. So I love what I do. And then kind of the pinnacle of this, Denise, was, Denise and I talked about this, was after 2 years, I finally got enough time, courage, whatever you want to call it, to go ahead and write the next book, because I had signed a 4-book deal with Sound Wisdom. So I finally penned that next book and sent it in, and that now is going to be published later this year.
Congratulations. What is the title? Do you have a working title, or is the title already chosen?
Yeah, the title is called Stop Chasing Influencers.
Oh, I know where you're going with that. I do. Squirrel, there you go. And look, there are a lot of great mentors, coaches, ideas out there. There are so many that it's easy to get overwhelmed and just keep batting at those balls in the air. I mean, it can get crazy. I know where you're going with it. I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, and so, I mean, and you got it. Like, when we tell people this, because I co-wrote this book with a friend. His name is Jared Easley. He is the host of the Star of the Doubts podcast. And I've been co-hosting that with him. So we've been kind of going crazy on the mic. But when we tell people this, they automatically get like a little bit of a negative connotation. And you got it right away. You know, the message is this. It's not, this isn't a shot at anybody. This isn't, oh, you can't look up to anybody. You can't have mentors. It is, don't get lost in that pursuit. Don't get lost in trying to connect with one of your heroes so much that you get distracted from your ultimate goal. And we are in a time when you can build this influence on your own. And then the book gives a roadmap. This is how you build influence.
And I'm glad that you explained that, because, look, I follow a number of people around, but I'm going to tell you straight out, and I've told you this before, I'm very discerning about who I follow, because I don't want that shiny object syndrome. It is way too easy to go, oh, wow, I want that. I must do that. And, of course, it's probably, it's kind of like MLM marketing. You know, they're What are the statistics on that? One or two people out of every 100,000, it seems like, makes a really good living out of it. I am a firm believer, as are you, that you follow your own inner guide. You figure out what it is that really resonates with you, and you share that. It's really that simple.
Absolutely.
Now, these other guys, Brendon Burchard, Jeff Walker, Russell Branson, you know, there's a lot of these people around who can guide you and kind of tell you what steps you might want to take, but don't try to model yourself after them. Big, big mistake. They are them. You are you.
And I was guilty of that. I think we all have fallen victim to that. When you don't know what you're doing or you aren't making progress, you can't figure things out. The easiest thing for you to do is just to be like one of the guys that you like and that you follow. And the problem with that is that's not who you are. And people will see through that pretty quickly.
Right. And if you go look at some of these stories, you know, Jeff Walker, excuse me, is very open and transparent, there's that word, about putting, you know, pictures of him when he was sitting at a desk in a bedroom because that's all he had. And now he is a multi-millionaire, but he's very humble about it. And he worked his tail off to get where he is. It didn't just happen. Nobody taught him. He created his own thoughts and his own systems. And I strongly encourage anybody who is listening to the show, as Kamanzi, I'm sure you do too, follow your own path. You know, get help where you need it, but for God's sakes, follow your own path.
Yeah, and it's amazing what happens when you tune into that. What do I really want? What do I really want out of life, and how does this fit into who I am? And it took me a while to figure that out, but once I did, now I know. And so now it's easier to discern with the opportunities to take and the opportunities to say no to.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. I want you to go back. I want to kind of follow some of the steps you took because, I mean, you have done some remarkable growth. I mean, just remarkable in, again, a very short period of time. And you had a ton of stuff going on. I mean, you had to figure out what your message was, what your why was. Was that Simon Sinek that talks about that? Great book. I'm sure you've probably read it too.
Yeah.
And then how you were going to take all of these physical steps, you know, lose the weight, find the money, find the gathering, and all while you were working. So do you tell me no if you like, but would you walk us through kind of a typical day or week when this all started finally taking shape for you? I mean,
yeah.
How did you manage it all?
Chaotically. So I worked 60 hours a week doing the bread business. So it was a lot of my time, and it was odd hours. So I woke up at midnight and started the bread route around 1 a.m. and did that till around 9 or 10 a.m. I would usually come home and take a nap because I was tired and had the odd schedule. And it was just like a not even third shift, just like an in-between schedule. And so I would take a nap. I'd get up, the kids would still be in school because they're older. Now they're 15, 13, and 12, but this was about 3 years ago. So they were still older. They were still in school. So once I got up from the nap around noon, then I would have some time to kind of work on all this. So I would use that time to write and do a lot of writing and write all those articles that got featured on other places. I would search out podcasts and see what would be a good fit there. I would work on the social media, just connecting with people and making those relationships. And that's what I did for an entire year and worked hard and built and got. I remember the first time I had started coaching and somebody had paid me $1,000. And I'm like, does this person know what they're doing? They're paying me $1,000.
I think you told me about that because I remember going, well, why are you so shocked? I wasn't.
Oh, it was shocking. But so that's what I did with the schedule. Now, when I had to start working out, that was another thing that I had to throw in the mix. And so I would take the nap, I would wake up, and then I would go run. And then I would come back and I'd write like a madman. And any little bit of spare time that I had when we weren't doing family stuff or things weren't going on, I would use to write. And I wrote, I don't know how many words I've written, Denise, in the last few years, but it's been a lot of words. And I used every bit of time that I had like it was the only time that I had. And then in 2013, when I was able to quit, I suddenly had a lot of time where I didn't have those 60 hours on bread. And I don't know if this is ever the case for you, Denise, but, like, it was hard that first month because I wasn't used to this. I hustled in the margins. So when I had all this time, I sat there and did what I had to do that first 2 hours in the morning, and then I'm sitting there like, man, what am I supposed to be doing now? And so yep. I turn on the TV, turn on some Days of Our Lives.
Now that I didn't do.
Well, we can't edit that out, can we?
Sorry. It's out there for posterity.
I got caught in that trap of having too much time and wasting it. And it took probably a month to get adjusted and figure out, okay, I need to be using my time better. And so now kind of the schedule looks like I'll wake up. And it's a little bit different now because now that I live in Hawaii, there's a four-hour time difference between Central Time and 5 with Eastern. So when I'm getting up, you guys have already lived a lot of your day. So when I wake up now, I still wake up early. I wake up around 4 a.m., and the first thing I do is I run. I run every day. And I live in Maui. It's about 70 to 80 degrees every morning. I live in a part of the island on the south side of the island where it rarely rains. We get rain like 5 days out of the year. So it's perfect for me to always work out. But I'll wake up at 4, I'll go run, come home, take a shower, and then I'll spend an hour reading. I love to read. My grandfather instilled that in me a long time ago. I read at least 50 books a year. And for some reason, people keep sending me their books. So Sound Wisdom always sends
me
books, but then other authors, yeah they're like, they just keep sending books. And you know what? I'm going to keep reading.
Isn't
them.
That great?
So,
I know.
Awesome.
My attitude is when I go to the post office and I get a box of books from whatever publishing house it is, because they're always asking me if I will interview, you know, some of their authors. Sometimes I do. Sometimes it's just not, you know, the book is not suitable for my audience. But my attitude is if they are going to take the time to send me that book, I'm going to read it. And I have met some incredible people as a result of that. I mean, I am so honored. Every time I go to the post office and there's books, I'm like, woohoo! And I go skipping out to my car with them.
Well, I don't know. I think you feel the same way, but there's just something about a book. Like, it's just like this,
yep.
It's mystique, and it's an adventure, and it's an experience.
You have to smell them and read them and crack the spine. And look, I won't listen to Audible books. I mean, I listen to Audible business books. I love them. I can compartmentalize. I'm working away, and I'm listening to, you know, Brendon Burchard or Meredith Elliott Powell, you know, just somebody. I'm listening with one ear while I'm working. I can do that. I do not want to hear a novel or a murder mystery because I'm addicted to them. I don't want to hear it. I have to paint those pictures in my own mind as I read those words. Is that how you feel about it?
Absolutely. If I don't listen to too many audiobooks. When I did Bread, that's all I did because I didn't have the time to read. But now
right.
that I have the time, I'd rather sit there and read it. There's so much that more that you can do in the book, and especially if it's a longer book, like some of those big 500-page books. There's so much that can unfold. And so I like to spend an hour every morning just quiet for anybody wakes up. I'll open up the windows and the doors here and get that ocean breeze in here, and I'll just spend an hour reading.
Oh,
and
I hate
some
you.
Books.
You had to say, you had to. I am hanging up on you.
My friend Dixie Gillespie, I don't know if you know Dixie, but she says the same
Dixie's
thing.
Oh, yeah, Dixie's been on my show. Yep.
Yeah, she says the same thing whenever we talk. She's like, what's the weather? I'm like, you don't want to know. She's like, tell me. I'm like, oh, it's 81 and the ocean breezes are coming. She's like, I'm hanging up.
I'm with her. I may call her. We may have to talk ugly about you.
And so, but like sometimes, like the book that I'm reading now by Gail Godwin, it is an incredible book. And so I'll find myself reading the second hour while everybody's waking up and the kids are getting ready for school. I'm sitting there still reading, like I can't put the book down. But after that, we have breakfast as a family. Kids go to school, my wife goes to work, and then it's just me here in the house. And so that's the time, usually in the mornings, I'll have coaching, probably an hour, 2 hours every other day because of the time difference. So it'll be like 8 a.m. my time. Do that, I'll do some interviews. I do a lot of interviews these days. And then after that, it's just my time from maybe 10 till 3 when everybody gets home to write and create content. And so we got Stop Chasing Influencers out. I'm writing a third book now called, and I'm writing this solo, it's called The 7 Choices You Regret at the End of Your Life. And so that's going to be my third book. I've been writing in there like a madman. But then, as you mentioned, I also write articles every week for the Huffington Post, Entrepreneur Magazine, Mind Body Green, and then The Good Men Project, and I also edit there as well. So that 10 to 3 is usually the time where I get all that done. And then on Saturday, it's all family day. We don't do anything, don't touch a computer. We go out and explore the island. And on Sunday, it's just like a lazy day. We'll all sit around, watch some TV, read a book, whatever, just not really do anything.
Right. So you have made sure to include and incorporate a very healthy work-family balance. A lot of people don't do that, and I think it's so, so important.
It's hard.
I know. I mean, look, we're both high-functioning workaholics and introverts. It's tough. I mean, those two things come with their own two sets of problems.
That's because it's hard when you're a solopreneur, entrepreneur, or whatever it is, to turn it off. We could go all night looking at email or reading or writing or whatever.
I'm afraid I do. I mean, I looked at my clock this morning, and it was 2 a.m. again. I was like, God darn it, go to bed. It's the third night in a row. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm still laying in bed staring at my ceiling fan, and I had to get up, take the hottest shower that I could stand without scalding my skin off of me, and then turn on some theta music, you know, brainwave music, to talk myself into finally going to sleep, and my eyes popped open at 6:15. Like, okay, here I go. But that's just the way we operate. It's not a hardship, I find.
Well, and now let me turn the tables on you, since you kind of said that I could have free reign here today. Let me turn the tables
on you. I did say that. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm finding that I'm doing a lot of stuff and there's a lot going on and there's a little bit of chaos and I'm letting a little stuff slip through the cracks. So I've been thinking now, hey, maybe now is the time to bring in like a virtual assistant to help with some of these tasks. How do you know when it's time and how do you ease into that?
I actually just wrote a report. Good question, because I just wrote a report based on a conversation, an interview that I did with Rachel Rofe. She interviewed me, and she asked me basically the same question, and I said, oh, my gosh, we could go on for hours about that. So I wrote a report, and I'll be happy to send it to you. Basically, this report is about creating your platform before you try to hire a VA, because it can be a very tricky, very expensive proposition if you don't know what it is that you need. It really can. And if you get a hold of somebody who can't consult with you and can't view your business as they would their own and can't instantly understand what it is that you need to do, where you need to be going, you're going to be in trouble. And I say that as a virtual assistant and an online business manager. You have to use some extreme caution when you're partnering with somebody like me. But if you find the right person for your business, oh, my God. I mean, it's amazing. So I'll send you that report, Kamanzi, but basically, the way you are set up right now, because you're there, your platform is built. I mean, you are out there. You've done a stellar job of drawing attention to what it is that you do and how you can help people and how you're a resource for people. What I would advise that you do is follow yourself around for about 2 weeks. It takes that long. And just start jotting down all of the things that you're doing that are repetitive, that honestly are below your pay grade, that you should not be doing. things that just bore the crap out of you, you know, to put it bluntly, because there's a lot of those things too. And, you know, just really find out what it is that you're doing during the day that just makes your heart sing and you love doing it and you wake up to do it, and those other things that drain you that just do not, they have to be done, they must be done, but you shouldn't be doing them. That's my best advice.
That's good advice. Yeah, there's definitely, I can think of a few things right off the bat.
I bet. Well, listen, once you've got that list, give me a call. And, you know, I've got that virtual assistant group on Facebook, and either I can help you or I can refer you to some great, great people in that group. So you're not alone. I'll help you with it.
Yeah, thank you. And so that's, I think that's the balance and the paradox of all of this is building it was just so hard, and I had to do it on the side. And then now it's grown, and it's continuing to grow, and I'm grateful for that. But, yeah, then it's like, and I don't know about you, but I'm a little bit of a control freak. So the thought of...
No. Say it ain't so. I swear to God, we're twins. I'm convinced that we're twins.
The thought of bringing somebody else in, it terrifies me a little bit, but I know it's necessary to free up some of that time.
It is. And you can hand off tasks that are repetitive. You know, your newsletter, you know, taking your blog and repurposing it and moving it around to the internet. I always suggest to people that they work very closely with their VA or OBM to create what I call their documents. I mean, they're basically, and now I just lost it. My brain just went fuzzy. It's that 2 a.m. thing, 3 a.m. You basically want to have documents that you can share with your virtual assistant about exactly how you want things done. So you don't have to keep explaining over and over again. You know, you just create these things and you put them somewhere, a Dropbox or, you know, wherever you want to put them. And whoever it is that you work with, they're right there. There's no question about what you need done.
That's a really good idea. I trust you.
And you need to do it for you, too. I mean, honestly, because you said yourself, you know, things get a little scattergunned and you're probably forgetting things at the end of the day. You need to have a document somewhere. It's your brain dump. You need to have it somewhere where you can go, ooh, did I take care of Facebook? What about LinkedIn? What about, ooh, did I write that doc? What? So that way you can, it's like a little checklist. You know what it is you're supposed to be doing every day. And once you've got that little checklist so nothing falls off the grid, then you can figure out, well, I don't want to do that. Okay, well, there's parts of this I want to do and parts of it I would like to have my assistant do. Just make it easier on yourself.
I really appreciate those tips. So I'm glad I could interview you about that.
I appreciate it. You turned the tables on me, but I did say it was your show to do what you pleased with it. So.
Well,
thank you for asking.
Well, we definitely have to get you on Star of the Dallas, too, to talk about this, because I know there's many entrepreneurs that are in the same boat.
I'd be honored. Just tell me what you need and when you need it, and I'll show up. But,
see?
Okay, so you're now, in, you know, you're going through your growth spurt, and you know that you're probably going to need to do things a little bit differently. And, you know, that's part of being an adult. I mean, having a grown-up business, and that's a great thing. But my question is, honestly, how did you manage to, well, here's a bigger question. Well, at the top of the show, we mentioned your debt because you started a business, you worked your business, but you really didn't understand finances and you got terribly in debt. How in the world, and I know my audience wants to know this too, in just a short, short period, did you get all of this stuff done and retire your debt?
Yeah, for me, the debt was really paid off with the book sales. So I had self-published the two books, and they had sold over a two-year period. They had sold 86,000 copies, and
right.
They had sold that at a royalty rate of $3.78 for me after Amazon took their cut. So it was a lot of money, and it wasn't like I got a big lump sum check that came every 3 months from Amazon. But as that money came in, all of it went towards debt. We didn't use any of it. And so by the end of...
See, that's a big thing right there. You didn't live on that. It wasn't living expenses. That was allocated funds for debt. Okay, got it.
And to keep in mind, too, my bread business that I had, My bread business was a $200,000 a year business, gross. That's not net. You know, you have taxes and other expenses to pay for that. But it was a well-paying business. So we had money. We just didn't know how to manage it when we were younger. But by the time we got older,
common story.
And a few things, yeah,
right.
we were able to start saving and to start paying off that debt. And the book money came, and we used that to pay off the debt. So by the end of 2012, beginning of 2013, we had a good portion of that debt paid off. And then some of that money also we put in a savings account that we didn't touch. We just wanted to have a really large emergency fund for this in case something ever happened. And so continuing to do this, to continue to sell books and build this business, all that money just went towards debt.
I don't think I had ever asked you about that, and I'm so glad I did because that's important. I mean, if anybody's thinking about writing a book, whether it's an e-book, which will, you know, eventually lead to all the different things that you've been talking about, don't stop. I mean, just do it. You know, come on, tell them, go for it.
Yeah, and so the book money was good to us, but then when it came to 2013, we had built up a good emergency fund. We continued what we did, and when you start to throw in coaching in there, and then you start to throw in speaking in the mix, because I had spoken 36 times in 2012, and then 12 times in 2013. But by 2013, I had figured out a little bit more about speaking and what I wanted to do. 2012, 36 times. And keep in mind, I was traveling to speak while I was on the bread job. So I had to do this like on the weekend. Yeah.
And some of these, I remember you telling me, were not paid gigs, too. I remember that.
Yep. And so the way that I kind of compensated that was to bring books, to sell books, and so all the things I had on my website. But these were just all out there to get out there and hustle. So 2013 came around. I had some experience. I was able to start negotiating some really nice fees to go and speak. And I got to go to some really cool places. And that's when I started doing a few private gigs. And those had paid well, too. But between the books and the speaking and that, we had really amassed a good savings. We had paid off all the debt by the end of 2013. And it was a good thing because moving out here to Hawaii is such a scary venture. And we wanted to make sure that we had a large emergency fund just in case. Because it's not cheap to live out here, I'll tell you that.
No, it's not. It's kind of, you know, California, New York, Hawaii. Oh, my gosh. You know, where I live, it's really reasonable to live here. I think I'll stay. I can live very, very well here. But, I mean, Hawaii, I get it. I can understand why you go there. Standard operating procedures, my brain fart kicked in. An SOP, you need to create SOPs for yourself and for whoever it is that you're going to be partnering with as a virtual assistant down the road. So you're very clear on what you're handing off and what you're not. So it's easy to talk with somebody if you know what it is that you want done and you're not going, well, what can you help me with? I mean, you never want to go into something like that tentatively. You need to be very, very clear on what it is that your VA is going to be doing with you. So anyway, we're through with that. It came back to me. I went, oh, really?
I love that.
My brain works in mysterious ways. That's all I can say. But anyway, one thing that I have noticed time and time again, because like I follow you on social media, we chat every once in a while. You have, I mean, you're blessed. You're very, very fortunate in that your wife was with you 100%. She was willing to make whatever sacrifices in terms of, you know, well, we can't quit for pizza, we're saving money. She's been with you 100% and your family has. I mean, talk about that a little bit if you don't mind.
Yeah, because this would have been very hard to do if she was kind of fighting me while I was doing this. It would just create so much friction. But, for example, when I was writing my first book, I was using every bit of time I had. I wanted to get this book out there to the world. And a lot of times we would be there as a family, but I wasn't there. I was in another world. And I'm Denise, I know you can relate to this. I was there with them, but I was tuned into what I was doing. And so she was very understanding that way. Second book, she was very understanding. But then the whole traveling, like the traveling thing, I think, was probably the biggest thing for her to swallow, because almost every other weekend I was off to some other place going to speak. And so it was a lot of missed family time, but she was supportive. She said, do this. And then as this is built and there's been a lot of elements and a lot of people have wanted my time, she's been very gracious. Now, don't get me wrong. There's been times where she's been irritated.
You think?
Yeah.
Look, I totally get it, but the by and large, she's been very, very supportive, I guess,
and
my observation.
And I just have that personality where I just don't know when to turn it off sometimes. So it'll be 5 and somebody will call, like my co-author will call or a friend will call and they'll have a question about something. And I'm sitting there chatting away and she's like, it's dinner time.
At that point, you need to shut it off. I'm telling you.
I need to. I've learned the looks. I've seen the looks and I know what those mean.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, and it's important to have that balance, because if you don't, you cannot sustain a really healthy home life if you don't have that balance. Ask me about this, because I know I'm a workaholic. I mean, that's what I do. I'm always thinking. I'm always doing something. And for people like me, it's difficult to have relationships that are very close and personal, because it's hard. You have to pull yourself out of your own head, and it's hard to do.
And I think the biggest thing that you hit on with support, especially her support, mm-hmm. also the support, I think I've told you in the past about my friends, my little support group, my two friends and my brother, which I've talked about in the book. It's important to have that system, because when my first published book came out, the very first review, I posted this yesterday, the very first review that I got, it was from somebody that was actually on my book launch team, and they completely trashed the book. They gave it a 1-star review. They said that it didn't need 1 star, it needed 0 stars, and they attacked me personally. And that was the first review of my published book. And, you know, if it wasn't for her support during that time, the support of my friends, I just would have given up. Because sometimes that stuff is just too much to handle on your own.
No, absolutely. But here's my thought on that. And I haven't read that review. But some people are just nasty. I mean, honestly, some people are just nasty. And there's nothing you can do to help them. So ignore them. I mean, you know your worth. People who love you and like you and follow you, they know your worth. That one little mean, nasty person behind the keyboard, negligible, not worth even worrying about. But you're right, it's hard to go, piffle, I don't care. That hurts. I mean, that would hurt.
Yeah, definitely. But the support, it was key in all of this, and all the ups and downs and the roller coaster ride that this journey has been. Her support, support of my friends, support of my children, it's been crucial.
It has to have been. I mean, I always wonder, you know, when I come across people like you who are just so driven and just say, look, I'm going to do this, and then by golly, they do it. It's not a matter of just you, is it? I mean, you have to have the home team support, so to speak. I mean, you have to balance all of these different things. You have to balance your work and your wife and your children, your family, your downtime, your exercise time. It's a balancing act. And I guess my question for you is, what clicked in your head? I mean, I don't know about you, Kamanzi, but when something is final, I'm ready to accept it, I literally hear a click behind my left ear. And that's when I know I'm actually going to do it. I know it sounds crazy. But, you know, I may be mulling something over or pondering it and going, I could do that. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I will do that. And I hear that click. It's a physical click. Have you had any kind of experience that just, or is there anything that you can pinpoint where you said, I'm doing it? And you hadn't. It's a two-part question. Then did it ever occur to you that you couldn't do it? That's an important question.
For probably the biggest click for me was in April of 2012, was when my father had died. And we've talked about this, but my father died at 54, and he died suddenly of heart disease. And I didn't see it coming. And we weren't close But he tried to reestablish our relationship when I was older, and I didn't want to hear it. I was bitter. I was angry. I didn't want to have anything to do with him. But he died, and I went to his funeral, and as I was on his funeral, I realized I'm not going to get another chance to reconcile with him. This is it. It's over. And I regretted that. And then I found out later that his mother, my grandmother, had committed suicide using his chemistry set. And
oh,
it had
God.
Messed up. Yeah, and he was just a messed up individual. And I didn't know any of this. And I didn't know what demons he was wrestling with. And I didn't even give him a chance. And I regretted that so much. And that was kind of the click for me, the life that I was living and things that I wanted to do, that I was living a life of regret just like he was. And there's so many things I wanted to do. And at that point, that was the biggest click that said, you have to do this. No matter what it takes, even if you crash and you fall down flat on your face, you have to do this to mm-hmm. honor his memory.
Well, wow. I don't remember you telling me about his mother and grandmother. I knew he had passed away. We did talk about that, but oh my gosh. So basically, you took that as, okay, I'm not going down this road. I'm going to be the best me that I can be across all levels, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and you just did it. And I think that is amazing.
And I try to take this just one day at a time, because when I initially thought about losing this weight and moving to Maui and quitting this job and the 7 other things that I wanted to do, it's overwhelming when you think about these big goals. And so I just told myself, I'm just going to wake up every day and focus on what I have to do that day. So when I woke up today, I just focus on what the things that I have to do today. And, you know, definitely there's some you definitely plan for the future, but the focus
sure.
is just going to be today and making today the best day that I can be. And I found just by doing that, it's made each day a very good day.
And look, that makes perfect sense to me, because, I mean, we all have goals. We all do. And you had some massive goals and a ton of them all at one time, which I think is what I find so remarkable about your story. It wasn't just one goal or two. You had a ton of them. But it sounds to me like what you have done is you made the very smart decision to take every day one bite at a time, so to speak. You have your goals. They're always there in the back of your head. You know what you're going for. But you don't make it difficult on yourself. You just take the steps that you have to take every day to keep moving those goals forward.
Exactly. And some
yeah.
days aren't good days. Not
well,
every day is a great day. Sometimes you have bad days. But the beauty of that is you go to bed, you wake up, and it's a new day.
Oh, no kidding. You can take a nap and wake up, and it's a new day.
Yes. Never even thought about that.
I mean, honestly, I don't sleep well. I never have. I'm a cat napper. I don't have insomnia. I just don't sleep a whole lot. My brain simply does not allow me to shut down. But I have found, as I've gotten a little bit older, that if I will take the time to just walk away from something, like I've got a sticky problem. You know, I'm a web developer. And I'll be looking at something in WordPress that is just driving me crazy. It's like, God darn it. And, I mean, yesterday, I very carefully moved my keyboard forward, moved the cat out of the way, and planted my forehead right on my desk. It's like, I am going to just, it was horrible. I was having the worst day. My brain did not want to function, so I said, stop, walk away. I went outside. Yesterday was one of those unseasonably gorgeous days here in the deep south in the winter, and I took a blanket out there, and I got on one of my chaise lounges, and I fell asleep in the sun for about 20 minutes. Come on, Z, when I came back in, it was all new and fresh, and I solved my problem.
Exactly.
It was magic.
That's,
it really was.
That's what you have to do sometimes.
Yeah, just walk away from it. So, listen, we've only got about 60 seconds. Where can people find you on the web?
You can find me at KimanziConstable.com. That's KimanziConstable. You can Google it, or you can go to livingorexistingbook.com, and that will redirect you to the site.
Are there any last thoughts that you'd like to leave our audience with?
Just one thought that we talked about at the beginning. It's possible. Whatever it is, your dream, desire, big goal, whatever is in your heart, it's possible. It may not be easy, and it may take more time than you think. That's usually how it works. But it's possible for you. It's possible. And if you take nothing away, take that away, that it is possible.
It is possible. Anything is possible. As long as you're above ground and you're still breathing, you can take every second of every day to make different decisions, can't you?
Absolutely, and you should. Life is short. I learned this through several really heartbreaking deaths, so don't wait.
Oh, thank you so much. Kamanzi, I'm so appreciative that you were here with me today. You were actually scheduled for next week, and I had a guest that had to reschedule. We swapped you guys around, and you stepped in at the last minute, and I'm so grateful for that. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Jen.
Oh, anytime. This is not your last appearance here, I promise.
Oh, no. We're going to talk.
Yeah, we will. And when your next book comes out, seriously, let me know. I'll be looking for it.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. And I'm glad we connected all those years ago.
Yeah, we did. Oh, very quickly, tell people about one of the very first things that you did after you came on my show is you got into a partnership with somebody that I introduced you to.
Yeah,
let's talk
wild.
About that just really quickly. We're still recording. We're not streaming, but we're still recording.
Okay, yeah. What ended up happening was Denise introduced me to a man named Jimmy Burgess. Amazing man. So much energy. Sometimes it's frustrating. But
does he wear you
great
out?
Man. He wears me out sometimes. I'm like, Jimmy, dude, take a breath, take a nap. But we hit it off. Denise introduced us. We started working together. I started coaching him, helped him with a few things. And he just took off. He took everything that we talked about, took off. And it got to the point where it went beyond coaching and working together to where we actually partnered. And we've done some joint ventures together, and we have some group classes. And, I mean, I love working with that man. He inspires me. He's got so much energy, and he's the real deal. And so, yeah, I'm always eternally grateful that you introduced me to Jimmy.
Well, he was, you know, I met him because he was on my show, too. His book was sent to me. But the reason I wanted to mention that is because it goes back to what we were talking about at the top of the show, social media engagement. Get out there. Get real. Meet people. Help people. I mean, that's really how you get to connect with people all over the world.
Yeah, you meet some amazing people.
You do. You do. Look, I live in a little tiny town in southwest Louisiana. I have got to chat with and meet and really know and respect people that I would never, ever have the opportunity to meet, ever. So, you know, my advice to our audience is get out there and make it happen. So anyway, well, thank you again so much. And everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour, maybe a little bit less. And you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Kamanzi Constable, and I will see you next week. Kamanzi, thank you.
Thank you again, Denise.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.